back, folks. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And on our way to this conversation, I want to remind you that conversations like this are brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, who is a proud partner for the 12th year with the Baltimore Cash Campaign for Money Power Day on Saturday, April 1st at the Poly Western Institute at Cold Spring and Falls Road from 9 to 3 p.m. Money Power Day is the region's biggest financial fitness fair. Welcome to everyone. Just show up. Congressman Elijah Cummings will help kick off the day. More information at moneypowerday.org or just come Saturday, April 1st, 9 to 3 p.m. at Cold Spring and Falls Road to the Poly Western Complex. All right. So having said that, which is a good thing, we wouldn't be here without folks like that. We want to tackle a subject we've tackled a lot over the many years the show has been on the air, but one that I think has taken on some much more ominous tones in this city and in this country, which have been the attacks on transgender people in Baltimore, in Maryland, around the country. Four people we know have killed in New Orleans, maybe more. And what that means, incidents have taken place that don't necessarily hit the news, that have been attacks on transgender people. And the complexity of why that is, and why it's coming to the fore now, and what do we do about it? So we are here in the studio. We welcome for the first time on the air with us, Kieja Tucker, who is peer navigator for the GLCCB Trans Activist and facilitator with Trans Baltimore Support Group. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
Welcome. Monica Stevens rejoins us, community activist with Sisters of the T, a member of the Baltimore Trans Alliance. Good to see you again.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Monica. And Ava Pipitone is executive director of the Baltimore Transgender Alliance and one of the worker owners at Red MS Bookstore and Coffee House. Good to see you, Ava.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join in, 410-319-8888. So one of the latest pieces of news that just happened, they said that Alphonso Wilson, who was found shot in the stomach on Guilford Avenue, that this is kind of the most recent attack that I know of, Monica, but they've been on the upswing, right?
I don't know that they were ever on the downswing.
Okay, let me get that mic a little closer to you.
First of all, I don't know that they were ever on the downswing.
Okay, yeah.
And there are a lot of attacks that go unreported. It seems that attacks are only reported when they end in death. So there have been years where there were maybe a few less and years where maybe there were a few more, but I don't know that there was ever a downswing to say that there's an upswing or a downswing. This year, there have already been eight deaths of transgender women of color and 17 deaths already, and we're just in March.
Here in Baltimore?
Just around the country.
Yeah, whole country.
Yes, but I mean, we're just in March. So we're only 3 months in. So it's hard to project where we will end up by the end of the year, but that's still a lot.
That's a lot of people.
Yes, that's a lot of people.
So, and you said attacks. I know that there have been instances all over the city. There was one the other night around North in Maryland, in Cathedral, where a transgender woman was attacked.
Yes.
Right, by a man wielding a gun.
You're talking about the...
Yeah.
Right. That
happened right by Red Emma's, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we can jump into that. That's that was nearby. I was working on shift, and I could see people ran in to get me. And that's, you know, I don't know how to summarize that, or if we want to, you know, go into the details of it. But it's an instance of someone immediately seeing a trans person and seeing that trans person as disposable. Seeing
exactly.
them, yeah, no accountability if you were to dispose of this person, and there's no value in their body, and they can be violent in interacting with them without fear of consequence. And this is in the middle of the day.
It was in the middle of the day, wasn't
middle
it?
Middle of the day, yeah. So that's why we were fortunate that I was on shift. There was people around right at the scene.
And
there were other people.
You all intervened.
Yeah, there were other people sitting with her, the woman who was strangled and hit. There were other people sitting with her doing exactly what she was doing, which was sitting. So she was singled out because of her body. She was attacked because of her body, and then fortunately,
when you say that, what you mean when she was attacked because of her body?
Yeah. I think people have a response to seeing someone and observing our transness, right? So when you see most of us, most people don't even know they're interacting with trans people, but sometimes you do. And people call that different things. Okay, Trans 101 right now. People call that different things. Sometimes they say...
The majority of people in this country and our community need Trans 101.
Right on.
Exactly.
So sometimes it's called...
It's not a joke.
Yeah.
It's definitely serious.
Like, our safety is often linked to if we're observed or not. I like to say the term observed. Like, if you can observe that I'm transgender, then I am observable. I don't like to say that I'm passing. Passing is something that has been used to describe trans people who look like they're not trans. So a trans woman, see just in a crowd of women, I'm just a woman. Like, it's an experience I have, and there's a lot of safety that goes along with that, that non-observable status, with that passability. In this case we're talking about, she was observed. She wasn't passing in that moment. And that elicited an emotional response from this person. I can't have a trans person sitting out front of my business. I can't have a trans person interrupting my day, and I need to eliminate this situation. So it escalates quickly.
So
the concern for me at this point is the lack of, like she said, the lack of value for people's lives and their humanity. And it sickens me that most of the violent outbreaks that come from the attacks of these women are coming from black men, our own black brothers. I'm appalled. I'm baffled. Like, you know, how is it that you see a person and living in their authentic self, and then you just take it upon yourself to end the person's life because you don't understand. This is something that you fear. This is something that you have no education of. But, you know, out of ignorance, this is how you react to someone who belongs. These are lives that don't belong to anyone. Like, you know, we all have families. We all come from somebody. We come from something. Like, I just don't understand, like, you know, and the first reaction that these men give is to commit bodily harm to these girls.
So one of the things that happened when I first heard the story, and I don't want to be stuck on the story, but I'm going to expand way beyond that. But this one aspect, I think, is an important thing to explore. You know, we almost had some folks on here from out of the city to kind of talk about this in kind of psychosocial terms, but I think you all can do it without this person from academia. The first question I asked when I heard about this story was, what happened? I mean, was this quote-unquote straight man trying to pick up a trans woman and then freaked out? I didn't know. I was asking the question, right? So, and that made me start thinking about this whole question of why, for a lot of men, straight men, or allegedly straight men, is there such a violent reaction to people who are trans?
So let me clarify, allegedly. You don't have to say allegedly, because anybody that deals with a trans woman is straight. He's dealing with a woman. This is regardless of what the prefix is, it ends with woman.
But I think that's not in the, that may be correct.
That's why, these girls are getting killed, because they're misconstruing, you know, the fact that these are women, regardless of what they look like. Women come in different shapes, sizes, and colors.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You have women that look like men, that they aren't getting killed.
Yeah.
So forget about what's between their legs. Let's talk about how they're being identified, how some of them look, because some of these trans women are gorgeous, and real as rain, if that's the terminology to use.
Yeah.
So, you know, if these men get caught up on the fact that society has it stuck in their head that you're gay if you mess with a trans woman.
Really even the bigger narrative.
Right, what's the bigger
narrative? Because the bigger narrative is in one minute, they're so infatuated with us and fascinated by us that they can't resist us. And then in the next minute, they're dealing with such, a deep inner conflict that we have to die.
Right.
So, you know, something has to be resolved in that. And that's not an issue that lies with us. That's an issue that lies with them. Exactly. And then we're left to try and explain. Right. We're left to try and explain what that is. And now we're dealing with some false narrative called trans panic. We were having a conversation about that on the way over here. You know, and the trans panic part lies with all of these false narratives about us. One of them happens to be whether or not we're real because we have genitals that people think we shouldn't have, or we lack genitals that people think that we should have. You know, and interestingly enough, by extension or by exclusion, if we have those genitals, then we lack the brain power to even engage in the same intellectual conversations we're engaging in now. You know, so there are all of these false narratives, and interestingly enough, on top of that, another piece of that by extension is the same people who seem to push these narratives are people who don't know us.
Okay, come on.
Right. And I think there's a, and Monica, we were talking on the way over here, like you said, I think there's a layer to it where there is that the panic is the appropriate word, but what are they panicking about? And I really it resonates with what you said, really resonates with me. And then when I think on a systems level about the systems of oppression that we're dealing with, we're dealing with cis sexism, we're dealing with transphobia, and when someone is with a person and so there's a heterosexual encounter happening and this person is the male perceives a woman to be a cisgender woman and then discovers her trans status and then is programmed to remove the gender variant person, is programmed to, like we said, devalue. And it's like when you the language I used vernacular on the way over here, I was saying like when you discover that you're with a trans person, like, oh no, I thought we had killed all of you already. Oh no, there's a trans person, we got to kill it. Mm-hmm. And that language, I just used really transphobic language to describe, like, in describing that. But that's like the thoughts that go through people's heads. They think, "Oh, I thought we already got rid of all the trans people. Oh no, here's one. I have to kill this person." And that's literally what happens.
What do you mean that's literally what happens?
Can
you get into that a little bit deeper? What you just said.
So, when you are having a connection with someone, so when I personally am having connections with someone, I tell them I'm trans. And this is a conversation in the trans community that we have in our community about revealing your status, and that maybe not be the focus of this moment right now. But when someone, when you haven't disclosed and you are like engaging with someone physically, and then they have this moment where they are realizing your status, and then it's on them to respond, they're responding how they've been conditioned to respond. And absolutely, we've been conditioned to conform to a binary, and when we see a binary being challenged, we react. And it's such a deep core challenge, and people don't like being disturbed at their core.
So, all right. So picking up what the three of you just said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So where do we go? I mean, where does it take? In other words, if we know that that violence is taking place against trans people in our community and around this country, B, that we know that more often than not the police don't take it seriously, and think people who are trans are freaks and that they're secondary, they're not as important as
less
the rest,
than.
Which happens a lot less than, right? And that see that the trans world is becoming much more visible in America in a very open way and vocal way than it ever has been.
They have to give.
So where do we take this from here? Do you think as a city and society?
People, it's more so like sit back and watch and observe. These girls go and buy CDs from the store. You know what I'm saying? I say that to say we're the ones spending money. We're the ones holding down jobs. We're the ones finishing schools. We're the ones out there making something of us. That we're not. Some of us are not just on the stroll. Some of us are not just prostituting. Some of us aren't scamming. Some of us are not, you know, out there living reckless lives. Like she's, mm-hmm. like Ava said, some of us actually, you know, reveal ourselves, our truth, to people that we have connections with. But if these people realize that, you know, we bleed just like them, we are the ones, like, I bump little Scooter. You know, I love music. Like, does that make me any different or any less than? Yeah. I mean, I'm doing the same stuff that half these people are doing. I'm no different. And if they see the message, they sit back and observe. They educate themselves, you know, and stop thinking that every trans woman wants every man she sees. And stop thinking that every trans woman actually wants a man. Because some of these girls actually like girls. You know,
right?
We
right.
are women just like women Say are that. Women. You have women that like women. You have women that don't like women.
Women who like queer people. You have right. women who like, So and like you just said, right when you started giving that answer, you said, you know, get out of the way. And Mark, that is that. She just said it. That's the answer. Like, where do we go from here? Cis people, get out of our way.
So can I just stop you? So we use nomenclature, and we assume that the world knows what you mean.
Right. Cisgender means What's not that? Trans. Cis means the same in Greek.
You identify as the gender that you were born with.
Right. So yes. Non-trans people, get out of our way. Like, we are just living our lives. We want to be free to live our lives. We want to get free. And in order for us to get free, you need to stop oppressing us. In order for you to stop oppressing us, you need to understand that you're oppressing us. And you, not us, need to educate yourselves on how you are doing that. How are you a conduit for transphobic oppression? How are you othering, excluding, making trans people feel less than? And then stop doing it.
The deeper issue is that you have families with children who are trying to find themselves. And they're afraid because they're seeing their uncle and their father or their cousins commit harm to these girls. That is only setting them up for another failure. That's only setting them up for either incarceration, which is number one keeping our black men down, incarceration, mm-hmm. or death. And those are two things, first of all, that's keeping our black men oppressed. Incarceration and death. You know?
So I do want to encourage, you can jump right, both of you, let me just say 410-319-8888. We want to hear your ideas, thoughts, and questions. Please join us by phone at 410-319-8888. Or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, or you can email us at talk@steinershow.org. I want to hear your thoughts and ideas for the three women in our studio as we explore the latest murders that have taken place against trans people here and across the country, why that is, and what we need to learn and to change and to build a culture that is for all of us. 410-319-8888. I want to hear your thoughts. So please join in. We can say, Ava, then let you jump right back in.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. So one of these things that comes up in social media activism world and all the issues there and the usefulness there, another conversation. People frame it as like, stop this, stop that. And like they say, stop killing us, which is something that I say a lot in relation to trans activism, I say, stop killing trans people. Stop killing black trans women. And then people are like, okay, all right, we hear you. We can do that. But what that seems reactionary. And I hear people saying that feels reactionary. So I think there's a shift in messaging. You know, I'm not taking credit for it. I'm kind of participating in this collectively with other trans activists throughout this country, where we want people to start loving trans people. We want you to start loving black trans women.
Because we're loving people.
Yeah, we just want to love. And that's really what it's time for. And I think in that it's, you know, the only way to unpack all of these things that are happening inside the minds of people that are oppressing each other, preventing each other from getting to know each other. Like, we want to be a part of this. We want to be a part of this city.
Yes.
Yes.
Monica, you're about to say what?
Two things that I see and I notice. And so one of them is, for a long time, this movement was getting older. And so
literally older.
Older, mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
And so
right.
A lot of the leaders in queer movements, trans movements, gay movements in this city were getting older and burning out. This movement is now getting younger.
I can see.
It is getting younger, it's getting more diverse, and it is growing. And so young trans activists and queer people and people of color are growing by the numbers in this city and becoming more powerful and becoming a larger part of a bigger narrative in this city. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing is there's a shift in attitudes in this city, maybe even without people noticing that it's happening. because I remember a time, and you probably remember this as well, when maybe I would be the only person in the studio representing my community. You know, whereas now you have three transgender women on this panel speaking boldly about this subject. And we had a whole lot full of people who showed up at this vigil. And
the
so
one that was on
Saturday.
On Saturday.
Saturday. We passed, I had another gig down the street, and I was passed. It was in the lot there on the
corner.
Yeah,
right? Yes. Right, right. 100. Yes.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
But it's not the only event that this has happened with. So this has been consistently happening, that the community is growing and activating. And so there's a lot of energy surrounding all kinds of events in Baltimore. And so what has happened is there's an active community here that is growing, it's organizing, and, you know, business owners, we're working. And so some of the old narratives don't fit anymore. You know, and so when people say, well, the only thing I know transgender women to do is the trick on the street, that's a narrative that's getting outdated.
Classic.
Yes.
So,
it's classic.
So having said that, that's what I was trying that's what I was trying to get to with one of my first questions, which is that when I ask what we think deeply motivates people on this attack against trans people in our world, and what, you know, so the part of the theory that I work from is that in the past 60 years, America has undergone a dramatic social shift and change from the civil rights movement on. It gave birth, really, to all these other movements and people speaking out. And so it has turned America on its head. And all the things we thought we believed in as a nation, as a whole, I'm saying, have kind of fallen by the wayside, but we have nothing to replace it. So people are like at a loss, I think, really, in this country for lots of things. And I think part of the things that what you all represent to a lot of people in America is a confusion about what gender means, is a confusion about what their own sexuality means.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think that's and so that the anger that bubbles up, I think, bubbles up from a place of kind of total confusion. I mean, that's part of it, and hatred, you know, that's combined with that. But so is it something has happened that has that people don't understand?
The messages from music, the messages from media, the messages from social media is sex. It's all sex. So how does one not get upset when he's intentionally thinking vagina and he sees a trans woman and gets something else? I understand, and I can relate to that frustration and the upset that you get from that, but stop thinking sexual. We're not sexual objects.
Right.
We are people. And just to keep it 100, like, not every trans girl is ready to drop to her knees. And not every, you know, and not every trans girl is about will do anything extreme for a dollar.
Right.
You know, and I'm not one to sugarcoat about my story. I've not always been on this side of the desk. I desired to leave a lifestyle that was not healthy for me, and it was not safe. I saw that it was not safe, and I cherished my life entirely too much. So with that said, how do I look walking down the street in fear of something that I worked so hard for? I'm building my life, you know, and that's all, like Ava said, that's all we want to do is build our life and continue. We're building a city. We're putting a city together. We're trying to bring homeless shelters to Baltimore. We're trying to bring transitional housing to Baltimore. You know, these are the things that we as transgender women are trying to do for our community. Why are you trying to kill us?
Right.
Well said.
They don't want us to have it. They don't want us to have it. Like, that's the reality we're pushing up against. They don't want to see us shopping at the same shops. They don't want to see us owning businesses. They don't want to see us being teachers. They don't want to see trans moms, trans dads. That's the truth of it. And I think that I hope that resonates with listeners. Is that you don't want us in the city. You don't want us equal to you. You don't want us eye to eye. You don't want to connect with us. And we're like, we hear that hate. I hear that pain. I see that pain. But I'm sorry, we're not going anywhere. And you can't just brush us away. And this is like, I think time, you asked the question that opened it up, what is gender?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I have, like, I'm indoctrinated in this educational academic vocabulary. Okay. I can talk that jargon. I try to minimize it. Gender is a system of control. Gender is a system of control, it's a system of organization, and I can take it as deep as you want to go. If we want to talk about capitalism, we want to talk about how the binary gender system is created as a unit, and like heteronormativity is these are constructs. And they're younger than us. We are older.
Humankind, you mean?
No, trans people.
I'm saying, oh, I thought
yeah,
you
meant, I do. I mean that, and I mean right. Gender variance is, we bodies have never been two neat categories ever. We've always been a spectrum and other intersecting spectrums all at the same time and moving around in that. And I think when there's attempts to control us, and they're active attempts to control us and eliminate us, they fail, and they'll continue to fail, and we'll continue to build, and we'll continue to do the intellectual labor of cis people so that you can stop oppressing us until, you know, we win.
If so, like, I like how you said that.
Monica.
And so to go back to your question and the root of your question, the root of your question was about the anger that people are experiencing. The anger, from my perspective, the anger that people are experiencing is because on some level, people are beginning to sense that they've been lied to all their lives. Because people, you know, I know when I was young, I grew up, and so I was told that you pick one from column A and one from column B, and that's all there is. And so from the time that I was 4 years old, 1957, I knew I didn't fit in column A or column B. And everybody kept saying, there is no other column. I'm like, well, wait a minute. There has to be another column because I don't fit in either one of them. You know?
And so you were four.
I was four.
Mm-hmm.
I was yeah. four,
I was
you know,
four
and so
you were four as well.
And so yeah. here's the
you
thing.
Too?
Yeah,
here's sure. the thing. Okay, by putting that false narrative on people, it causes so many of us to go through our lives with self hatred. And my self hatred led to 30 years of addiction. It led to scars that I hide from self abuse, and it led to like this whole belief that I was some kind of cosmic mistake. It led to all of this negativity, you know. And so some people make these agreements with themselves that turn into their reality, you know, that they fit themselves into one of these columns, column A or column B, you know, where somewhere inside they know that they really don't fit in one of those columns. And the only other answer is a negative answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not free. What happens is we don't end up being free to love who we want to love. You know, in freedom and in love. And so when that person finds that they want to love somebody like me, it can only lead to a damaging conclusion. It can only lead to self-hatred, and it can only lead to like some kind of suicidal or homicidal conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only thing left. That's the only thing available.
Yeah,
that's the only option they've given.
And that's the only option yeah, they're given.
And well, that, I think, was very powerfully said, what you just, the story you just told.
Yeah.
Important and for people to hear.
I want to, Monica, with what you're saying, I think it needs to be like, we just say that that process of coming to yourself and that process of unpacking and like taking out that lie you internalized, everyone needs to do that. I don't care if you're trans, I don't care mm-hmm. anything about, everyone needs to find who they are. And what happens is going through the process of transition, whatever that looks like, looks different for different people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to ask myself some real serious questions. I have to look in the mirror and think about aspects of my physical reality, my mental reality, my constructed social persona that I, all these things. And you have to think, unpack, challenge, and be ready to give up and make changes and find who you are. And it's a lot of work. And then when you go around the world and you encounter someone who is just in their privilege, there's a term called cis privilege, cisgender privilege. It's the privilege of having never, like, in your understanding, never needed to come to face with your gender. You just, you know, you say, I'm a girl. I'm always, they tell, the doctor says girl, I'm a girl. I'm good. I don't need to think about it. It's privilege. Whereas I've been thinking about it for, you know, 25 years.
Amen.
So, and the fact that you haven't thought about your gender, you haven't thought about how your body interfaces with this social construct of gender at all. And then I, someone who's been thinking about it my whole life, interacts with you. There's a mismatch. You don't know who you are. I know who I am. And you're scared of how well I know who I am.
Exactly.
Like, you're scared of the truth you see in me. Because it's like I can see you, and I can see that you haven't thought about the things that I've been thinking about for 25 years. And I can see you, and you're scared that I can see you. You're scared that I can see that part of you that you don't understand. Because I've been working hard to understand it in me, and I see it in everybody. And most people don't like knowing they have more work to do.
Exactly.
And Mark, there's a deep intrinsic problem with cis privilege.
Yeah.
Cis privilege is based on the assumption that you know because you've never had to question. Here's the problem. Okay, at the point that you're born, the doctor pulls the baby out, and so nobody ever identified for themselves the gender of the baby. The doctor says, congratulations, you have A, and you trust that that's an honest assessment. And we already know that sometimes the doctors pull out an intersex baby and perform a surgery and then say, you have A.
Say that.
So truthfully, you've never identified for yourself. And so you grow up because your parents said, you are A, and so they put you in pink or they put you in blue. And so it's already a process of brainwashing and conditioning. And so some people go comfortably with that. And some people don't go comfortably with that. And so there are layers upon layers of it. So if you've been conditioned to be a girl and they put you in pink, you go, I don't like pink. I actually think I'm a boy and I like blue. Then there are all these stigmatizing terms that come along with it and all of these isms and schisms that come along with it. And so we go through life again with that whispering narrative that says, there's something wrong with me. When the truth is in the beginning...
There was something wrong.
Well, in the beginning, the beginning, somebody else identified us. We never got to identify ourselves.
So, we only have a few minutes left here, unfortunately. But I think the narrative that the three of you have very honestly and deeply thrown out here in the last 40 minutes or whatever we've been together... it's important, deeply important, I think, because most of the world doesn't hear it.
Mm-mm.
Right? I mean, I think that's, to me, that you know, when I thought about this program today, I thought, well, okay, the violence against transgender people, we have to deal with that because we have to stop it. It can't be allowed to continue, and we have to get to the bottom of it. But as importantly, I think, is how we get to it and the way the three of you have described life is very critical to that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because that's and this is, you've been very open and honest about this stuff that I think is really, really heard. So I think it's really important that you all were sitting around here today for this.
Of course. And if I can say one thing.
Sure.
I was recently at a training where activists from all over the country, all over the world really, a lot of activists, you know, doing like direct communication work and whatnot, really, really good analysis coming from all of these groups that were represented. But I was the only trans woman there out of 200 people. This is people from the Movement for Black Lives. This is people from the Standing Rock, different Indigenous People's Power Project, all these different amazing groups that I deeply, deeply respect and will stand in solidarity with. I was the only trans woman there. And that conjured up a lot of feelings, first of all. But as we got into it and we started talking about what motivates us, I had to start unpacking a lot of trauma. And someone said it, and then another trans man who was there said a thing, and then I've been repeating it. Basically, he says, like, more than half the people here, and this is like the creme de la crop of activists that I've ever been with. More than half the people here are not down, or not put their bodies in line, are not down for trans issues. And I couldn't bear to hear that. So I kept saying it. I said it at the next day in Morning Circle. I said it in like the next review at the end of the day, how we do. I kept saying it. I kept saying, hey, more than half the people in this room are not down with trans issues, and I'm going to keep saying it until something changes.
And we'll come back to this again soon. That was the last word, at least for this particular segment, because we have another one coming up behind us. But I want to thank the three of you so much for the work you do and for coming in the studio. You just heard the voice of Ava Pepitone.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you all. Executive Director of the Baltimore Transgender Alliance and one of the worker owners at Red MS Bookstore and Coffee House, Monica Stevens, who's a community activist from Sisters of the Tea and member of the Baltimore Trans Alliance, and Keisha Tucker, who is a peer navigator with the GLCCB Trans Activist and facilitator with Trans Baltimore Support Group. And thank the three of you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
We'll take a short break. And when we come back from this break, it's The Wiz coming to Morgan.